Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today, since it's Monday, we have our winners and losers segment. We have a lot of great Twitter questions from our listeners, and we are going to close the podcast with a deep dive on Milan, a team that's been on the news a lot for very good reasons. And we're going to have Matt Santangelo. I know a lot of you guys know him. He's finally making his Calcio Land debut. We recorded this on Saturday, so I think you'll enjoy that interview. So we'll close on Milan. But before we get to that, I think you guys know where we have to start today. And I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, producer of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. The latest twists and turns in the Icardi saga. So with this being Inter and Icardi, I have to tell you what time it is now. It's like 10 in the morning in Boston on Monday. I'm sure a lot can change if you listen to this podcast tomorrow. But this is kind of where we're at. And I want to ask you, Alex, which of these things surprised you the most or what stood out to you? So Icardi wasn't selected for the match. His former team, Sampdoria, because of a muscular injury. Sounds like a pubalgia, as they would say in Italy. He did attend on Saturday. A rock was reportedly thrown to his wife's car with the kids traveling in the car. That was something she talked about. Charges haven't been pressed, but it was brought up to the media. We had Icardi and his wife agent Wanda attending Inter's match against Sampdoria, which Inter won, and we'll get into a Ewing Theory connections there. And last night, Wanda, who is a pundit on this famous TV show in Italy called Tiki Taka, was on giving her version of the events. And former Juve CEO Beppe Marotta, who's now been at Inter for a few months, called into the show last night to kind of console her, but also give his side of the events. So definitely a lot going on here. So I have to tell you, I have to ask you, Alex, which of these things surprised you or what stood out to you the most?
I can only laugh, David. I really can. Marotta having to console Wanda Nara is just, I'm sorry, that's hilarious. How often do you see that dynamic happening, especially publicly? Now, what's not hilarious is a rock being thrown at her car with kids in it. That's just absolutely awful. And them attending the match, that's a little bit of a surprise. But David, I rarely do this with the questions that you ask me, but I'm going to choose none of the three, and I'm going to choose the fact that Icardi was also having a public beef with his sister on Twitter. I mean, how out of hand have things gotten? Now, obviously, all of these things are surprising, so I'm really just being tongue-in-cheek here, but the fact that Icardi is now at the depth of fighting with his own family member in public is just ridiculous. And it wasn't just a small little back and forth. There was at least two back and forths there. And it was just for the whole entire world to see. So it's not just that he's having problems with his club or people are questioning the dynamic with him and his agent / significant other. But no, he's also having problems with his family member. Everybody was just joking on Twitter, like a friend of the show, John Solano, quoting it, just saying, "Oh, no worries. Icardi just beefing with his sister. Nothing to see here." I mean, I had to blink a couple times just to believe if it was true. So I'm really going to say they're all ridiculously surprising. The one thing I really have no patience for, obviously, and this isn't just me, is please, come on, the throwing of the rocks at someone's car. You can't be such an idiot like that. The Marotta thing consoling Wanda Nara kind of publicly on TV, that's hilarious to me. But I'm sorry, I could not get over it. And of course, I had to read the translation, David, because I don't speak their actual language, but I could not get over the public Twitter beef between Icardi and his sister. So that's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, so you know, this season in Serie A, we don't have a title race, that's for sure. This weekend it was that this point was driven home even more over the weekend, and the last season we had an incredible, but we won, but we don't this year. But I have to say, for that drama is more than being made up off the pitch. It's interesting you mentioned the sister part. I had even forgotten about it because so much happened in between. I will say to me that really stands out to me is the Marotta angle. I mean, I can't imagine him while he was at Juve, you know, calling in a live TV show. Like, it was close to midnight in Italy, having to try to clean this whole situation up. You know, in Italy, Inter's known as Pazza Inter, and the club has tried to be a lot more pragmatic and take a lot out of the Juve page. We look at the way they suspended Nainggolan after he showed up for practice late, and then Icardi losing the captain's armband, which he probably shouldn't have had in the first place. I think one thing that really stands out of this whole situation is it seems, you know, he had a lot of players on the team had problems with him. You know, he's a young guy. He strikes me as more as a follower. And look, he's been very loyal to Inter. He deserves credit for that. Probably been underpaid, but you know, this whole situation kind of drives home that he shouldn't have been the captain. And the thing that really stands out to me is all the public quotes. Let's also throw Spalletti in the mix, who's publicly attacked Marotta for how the Perisic thing was handled, how Icardi didn't get a new contract. And even yesterday, after Inter wins a very important match against Sampdoria, let's give credit to Inter because they were in complete free fall 10 days ago, but beating Parma and Sampdoria has really helped at least their position in the standing. So after that happens, Spalletti says, hey, you know, it would have been nice had Icardi come down in the locker room to celebrate with our players. So he really ended up throwing more fuel to the fire when maybe there was an opportunity to maybe bring this thing to an end. But, you know, I guess Inter's brand, despite the fact that Marotta is here, we have complete new owners. The Moratti era is over. Their brand is still chaos. And look, you know, I really enjoyed our friend Andrew Barker's perspective. He's a diehard Interista. And he said, you know, while it does get old and, you know, he'd like just the standard season, in a way, he doesn't want Inter to be just like Juve. And he appreciates this more sentimental part of the club. So definitely very fascinating, to say the least.
Yeah, this is some really grab your popcorn type stuff, David. So this is the big, big question that everybody wants to know already. David, do you think Icardi ultimately stays at Inter?
Long and short of it, yes. And I already had said this on our last episode, and this is right after he had lost the captain's armband, before all the other things that we talked about happened. And I feel more strongly about him staying. Like on Friday's episode, I said I put it at about 35% that he would stay. Now I'm going to bring that up to 60-65%. Full disclosure, this has nothing to do with inside information. I haven't asked anyone. I mean, I haven't asked Di Marzio transfer question in like 3 years. Sometimes I talk to other people on the teams and sources that I know. I haven't asked anyone. This is just based on what I've seen and Icardi's you know, personality and how Inter is. And I feel pretty strongly that I think he's going to stay at Inter. I think in a lot of ways, and I don't have a big problem with his wife agent Wanda. I think 90% of what she does, I really don't see it that different than, say, Mino Raiola or some of the more colorful agents out there. I mean, the part where she throws Icardi's teammates under the bus, that's the part where I have a problem. But short of that, I don't have a big deal with it. We live in a new era with the Instagram and all that, and whatever. She uses leverage the way she can. But it really strikes me that I think they've been exposed. I think they really pushed, you know, they tried to create even more leverage to get him a bigger contract. I think he should be paid definitely as one of the top 5-10 players in Serie A. It seems they were trying to push the envelope there. And I think they took Inter too far. And I think Inter called their bluff. And as Wanda said, they found out he lost the captain's armband via Twitter, like the rest of us. And I think Inter was like, okay, you're going to play that game. We can do it too. And I think Inter knows that at the end of the day, Icardi wants to stay there. On Friday, I talked about the parallels a little bit to Totti. You know, big fish in a small pond, the place where you are comfortable. And, you know, it is a pretty good comparison. But to me, Totti went beyond that. It's also because of his connection to the city of Rome, where he's from. And I think Totti, in his prime, was good enough to be the best player on Real Madrid. I think Icardi, if he goes to a huge club, yeah, he'd be one of the top players, but not the star there. I think he loves living in the city of Milan. I think so does Wanda. You know, they have kids, some that are, you know, from another marriage. So to me, ultimately, it makes a lot of sense for them wanting to stay there. And now she's also backtracking on the new contract. You look at the quotes from Marotta saying the captain's armband has nothing to do with the contract negotiation. And maybe he does. It seems like really the issue has more to do with his teammates. We saw how different Perisic has been playing recently since all this happened. So in my opinion, how it ends is that Icardi is going to stay at Inter. I mean, keep in mind, he does already have a long-term contract. Maybe they don't, negotiate a new one anytime soon. Or if they do, the figures aren't close to what Wanda was originally looking for. I don't think he'll get the captain's armband back. Again, he shouldn't have had it in the first place. But if I had to predict, this is how I think it's going to end up. And again, this is no inside information. This is just my own opinion based on what I saw so far.
Yeah, there's no way. There is no way this storyline is running away anytime soon, especially in my world, because Chelsea fans are just drooling at the thought of Icardi leading their front line. But I have to say, if Chelsea are trying to get rid of toxicity, is Icardi really the guy? Think about that, folks. Think about that. All right, David, as we do every Monday after a weekend of Serie A, we do our wonderful segment of winners and losers. So without further ado, who are winners and losers, episode 196 of the Calciolan podcast?
So keep in mind, we're recording this before Roma-Bologna. To me, this weekend, a couple of things stood out. The Scudetto race, it was probably already over, but now it's really over. We had some very important developments in the race to avoid relegation and in the race for the Champions League spot, which are really quite juicy, and we'll address that in some of the questions as well. So let's start with the winners. We had Pavoletti scoring a brace against Cagliari. Parma had taken the lead in Sardegna. Pavoletti, who's been really excellent, a great bomber di provincia, once again saved Cagliari. With that win, I would say Cagliari is pretty much safe out of the race to avoid relegation. So really important win for them. The other match on Saturday was Milan's very impressive win against Atalanta. We'll get into that with Matt Santangelo, so I won't go over it too much since we discussed it there. Obviously, Piontek, big winner. Today, I saw a very interesting article on Gazzetta dello Sport where a lot of sporting directors and agents were asked about Piontek's value. Fascinating quote by Fiorentina sporting director Corvino, one of the best ones in Italy. He's been around the block a long time. And he said, you know, it's not just the goals that a striker scores. The price is also determined by the team that you're on. A team like Genoa can only demand so much for a striker like Piontek because, A, you don't know if he can score on a bigger stage. So Milan got him for $35 million, which right now looks like a bargain, no doubt about it. It was still a bargain for Genoa. And to add to Corvino's point, the other reason why this is important is a club like Genoa, when they get a guy like Piontek, they're usually paying very little. They paid $5 million for him. They're making a huge profit, $35 million on that. While a club like Milan, when they acquire a player like Piontek, they are spending a lot more to get him. So let's say hypothetically, and we don't want Milan to sell Piontek. I hope he stays there for a long time. But let's say hypothetically Milan were to sell Piontek for $70 million. They are basically making the same profit that Genoa did. So it was a fascinating quote by Corvino. If you're into the transfer market, definitely a lot to dig in. But more on Milan. Calabria had another excellent game. Paqueta continues to make a big impact. And Calhanoglu with a screamer goal. I can't imagine a player needing a goal more than that. Maybe he can be a player that can help Milan go over the edge in the next few weeks. So good for him. Then we had a very controversial match on Sunday morning. Fiorentina traveling to Ferrara to play Spal. Big VAR controversy. After the match, Spal president Mattioli basically said Chiesa's a clown for his diving and his antics. Fiorentina responded pretty strongly. Big win, though, for Fiorentina. Simeone scored off the bench. He needed it after Muriel's explosion. Garzon on loan from Roma had a strong match, so they are all winners. Then another match, really significant, both for the race to avoid relegation and the Champions League, was Genoa's win against Lazio. Big comeback for Genoa. Sanabria, who replaced Piontek, have been very good. So this deal for Genoa looks good so far. They haven't missed Piontek too much, which doesn't mean Piontek hasn't been great. Sanabria has now 3 goals in 4 matches for Genoa. And then we had captain Domenico Criscito with a screamer for the game winner at the end. Kind of like with Cagliari, puts Genoa in much better position for the race to avoid relegation. And since this was against Lazio, that was a goal that really benefited Milan. And let's see if Roma can capitalize against Bologna later today. Other two big winners in the race to avoid relegation. Empoli wins their first match since December against Sassuolo. Pretty decisive. 3-0. Udinese beat Chievo with a penalty kick. That was another one that was fairly controversial. Then we had Inter's win against Sampdoria. First winner is our friend Thousand Names, who nailed the prediction. We both had Inter winning, but he actually picked the 2 goal scorers. Nainggolan, yeah, okay, that's a good guess. But picking D'Ambrosio was pretty genius. So well done, Thousand. Shout out to him. We talked about Inter being a Ewing Fiori team with Icardi gone. If you don't know what that is, by this point, we talked a lot about it on the podcast. But in any event, Inter has actually done really well without Icardi's 5th match this season without him. They won all 5. Perisic also had a really good performance. And I was pretty impressed with Lautaro Martinez. He didn't score. Obviously, he doesn't have Icardi's scoring ability, but it seems he has a lot of the other things that people complain that Icardi lacks. His participation in the run of play, helping out the defense and all that stuff. So I thought that was an impressive performance for him. Sampdoria lost. Gabbiadini, though, had a good match and scored. Then we had a Torino they get a draw at the San Paolo. I was going to say impressive performance, but not really. They gave up a ton of shots on goal. But their goalkeeper, Sirigu, who's been really excellent this season, kept a clean sheet despite getting a barrage of shots from Napoli. So the losers, let's stay on this. Napoli's scoring woes. You guys know I love Milik. Overall, he's had a very good season. But the past 2 matches, he's missed a lot of good scoring chances. Napoli as a whole, and Ancelotti mentioned this in the post-match, had 18 scoring chances in the past 2 matches and no goals scored. Other losers, Lazio, as I mentioned, they've been really struggling with injuries. They had 10 first team players out in the match against Genoa. They gave up a goal at the end. We're going to get to it in the questions, but if you're a Lazio fan, I would be concerned. You guys know I love Milinkovic-Savic. He was out injured. I have to say, he just has an Instagram account. I'm not thrilled of these posts on Instagram before matches with his team when you're out living it up with his girlfriend and all, but I have very high standards for him, so maybe I'm being unfair. Last 2 losers, we had Sassuolo put in a really bad performance against Empoli. They do seem like they missed Boateng since he went to Barcelona. And the last one, maybe a little bit unfair, but there was the big showdown between Piontek and Duvan Zapata. Duvan Zapata didn't score, didn't have a particularly good game, while Piontek was really excellent. So those are winners and losers for the weekend. So now let's get to the Twitter questions. As always, you guys can send in questions for the podcast using the CalcioLand hashtag. Please do it. It makes it a lot easier for me to find the question. So as always, we take questions on Serie A. We have the Champions League coming. Transfers, you know, you guys seem to be interested in this year-round. TV, music, films. If you're into movies, definitely check out that interview I did with Andrew Barker last week. We got into the Oscars quite a bit. So Alex, which Twitter questions are we going to go over today?
All right, David, I promise I did not send in this first Twitter question. And this really, considering how well Piontek has been so far, this question was inevitable. David, do you think Chelsea should have gone after Piontek rather than making it easier for Milan to get him by taking Higuain off their hands?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, Alex. Like, obviously, it's great that you have huge reach. You've grown a ton. Fantastic work on your part. So obviously, a lot of Chelsea fans follow you and they listen to the podcast, and that's great. We want them to follow Serie A, but these are questions that we get independent of that. I'm glad to answer questions from anyone. So let's go back to the question. Yeah, I mean, look, hindsight is 20/20. Let's be fair, both you and I had reservations on Piontek at Milan. That take doesn't look too great right now. You know, obviously there's the connection between Sarri and Higuain. I feel like Chelsea, in a way, finally went all in with Sarri with that move. So at the time, it made sense to me. Obviously, it looks terrible now because Chelsea has really struggled. Piontek's been great. Higuain's been up and down for Chelsea. But the one thing that I will say, and maybe you can shed some light here, I have a feeling that even if Chelsea had acquired Cristiano Ronaldo, right now he would struggle on the team. So I think Piontek is in a perfect situation at Milan, a team with a lot of momentum, a young team. They really have great chemistry right now. Really the opposite of Chelsea. So maybe for Chelsea, they would have been better off. But I think for Piontek, it's much better that it worked this way. And again, you could get the original Ronaldo, the Brazilian one, on this Chelsea. And I have a feeling he'd struggle right now.
It really pains me to agree with you, David, but I couldn't agree with you more. Really great comment there about the chemistry. That is something that Milan has right now that I'm so jealous of as a Chelsea fan. I tweeted a few days ago that just sometimes a few players makes all the difference. Look what Bakayoko, Paqueta, and Piontek have all of a sudden done for Milan. And I'm not just saying that Chelsea need to replicate that. Sometimes just a few fresh faces can really change the vibe and the culture. And that's what's happening at Milan, and I'm really happy for them. All right, David, next Twitter question. Considering the injury crisis with 10 players out, what are the odds Lazio finishes in the top four in Serie A? And can they progress in Coppa Italia in the Europa League?
Well, I think you guys by now know that I kind of have a soft spot for Lazio. I can't really explain why. Doesn't mean that I don't like Roma. It's actually a club that I really like as well. This is even before Milinkovic-Savic. So every season, like, it's an August tradition, I overrate Lazio. And I thought this season they'd do well because they had tried to improve their depth. They brought in bench players for their key players. Lucas Lieva was a super important player for them. They brought in Milan Badelj to essentially be his backup. He scored yesterday. They had Caicedo as Immobile's backup. They brought in Correa to be a super sub. They had more depth on the wing. So to me, what Lazio did made a lot of sense. I always think they are one of the most logical teams on the transfer market in Serie A, but maybe 10 injuries is too much. We also talked a lot on the podcast on how in the first half of the season, both Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto is going to be out for a while. Really struggled. They were better before getting injured. So I have to say it. I'd be very surprised if Lazio gets back in the mix for a Champions League spot. At this point, I think the two spots are going to be decided between Milan, Inter, and Roma. Maybe Atalanta as an outside shot, but I really see it playing out this way. In the Europa League, it's tough. They lost the first leg at home. They are getting, looks like, Milinkovic-Savic back for the second leg, but that would be tough. I think the Coppa Italia is a good target for them, especially with Juve and Napoli being out. So that's kind of what I would focus on, because that is a good trophy. It allows them to go back into the Europa League. So I think if I was Lazio, that's what I would focus on the most.
All right, next Twitter question comes from a real, real loyal Calcio-Lam pod listener. John LaMorta asks, in which cases were fans/pundits more prisoners of the moment? Di Francesco potentially getting sacked, Gattuso's ability as a manager, or Juve in a crisis?
And shout out to John LaMorta. Love his support. Always sends so many great questions, supports everything I do. Great guy. So thank you, John, for your support. So for me, the easy answer is Juve in crisis. I always found that was kind of absolutely laughable. I think anything that happens to Juve this season has really been a first world problem. There was that tough stretch, which coincided with Bonucci and Chiellini's injuries, and everyone felt the sky was falling. Yeah, the loss against Atalanta in the Coppa Italia was rough because that took them out of the treble. But keep in mind, Bonucci didn't start that match. Chiellini got hurt against Parma. They gave up 3 goals at home. But I think that had much more to do with the issues with Rugani and Caceres than any really big issue at Juve. Not surprisingly, they got a little bit healthier. They're steamrolling Serie A again. So that was definitely I don't even know if that's prisoner of the moment. I think Juve fans, the club's been so strong for so many years that they tend to make mounds out of molehills. I will say the one that I personally regret is not being more patient with Roma, because I really try to have a long-term view and not be prisoner of the moment. I should have seen it coming. Young team. They had lost a lot of veterans. I have to say the one thing that did surprise me is how good Cristante has been. But aside from the rest, I should have saw that coming. So me personally, I should have been more patient with Roma. As far as Gattuso, I wrote an article about him yesterday for a friend at Euro Fantasy Game. I mean, for me, it's really simple. It's very easy to pick apart the things that Gattuso doesn't do well because they're pretty evident. But I think we often don't give him enough credit for the things that he does well. The chemistry on the club, everything that he handled with the injuries, integrating a lot of players, he deserves a ton of credit there. So I think maybe fans should try to, you know, focus on what he brings to the table too, not just what he does wrong.
All right, David, I enjoy this next question. Am I crazy for seeing a lot of Ancelotti's ways in Gattuso?
No, but I'm going to answer this a little bit differently. Obviously, Ancelotti was at Milan. Ancelotti used to be a midfielder for Milan, who then coached the team. So it's the parallel there. I see the way they handled the locker rooms pretty similar. Like Gattuso, a lot of people expected him to be like the sergeant in Full Metal Jacket, like a drill type of guy. He really hasn't been. I mean, if with Bakayoko, a little bit of the carrot and the stick, but he's been very supportive as his players. The one thing about Ancelotti is he's not a tyrant. He tries to build like a family atmosphere. So no, you're not crazy. But I will say, Matt Santangelo got into this. I see a little bit more parallels maybe with Conte and Gattuso, but keep in mind, Ancelotti was one of Conte's role models as manager as far as creating a big group. Now, maybe Conte isn't as positive and, you know, friendly as Gattuso and Ancelotti, but I definitely see parallels between the two. So well said there for sure.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Should Milan look to sell Suso in the summer if they qualify for the Champions League, especially since he'd be a pure profit after joining for only 500K?
Interesting situation, but I'm going to answer this kind of how what I say about coaches. Very easy to sack a manager, much harder to find a replacement. Now, the listener, and his name's Nathan, made a really good point on Suso being essentially a pure profit because he came essentially as a Bosman signing. Milan paid Liverpool a little bit to have him join in January. So he is right. He'd be a big profit. But Suso does have an exit clause. It's around 40 million euro. And I have to say, you know, he's a good player, but he is pretty inconsistent, has stretches where he's not that good. That sounds about right for his value. In my opinion, I mean, keep in mind, Juve paid Douglas Costa from Bayern around 48, 50 million. When you combine everything, I think we can agree Douglas Costa is a better player. So 40 million sounds about right. But then you have to ask yourself, you know, can Milan get a player that's as good, if not better, than Suso for that price? And that gets a little bit dicier. So if you told me Milan can replace him with someone better or equivalent, yeah, I would definitely do that. I just think Milan, you know, is at the point where they need to hold on to as many of their good players as possible. So, but in theory, I don't disagree with this question. I mean, I could see this does make sense to me. But again, I find finding a replacement for that price might be maybe a rather challenging.
All right, how about this? What did you make of the news regarding Roma finally getting their new stadium, and will that help them close the supermarket?
So I don't want to be pessimistic on this. You know, I know Roma fans have been very excited, but I've always said I'll really believe this when they start building the stadium, because this isn't the first time the mayor of Roma, Raggi, has made a big dog and pony show about the stadium being approved and that it'll happen, yada, yada. This had happened before. Then we found out, oh, we need the approval of the region. Like in Italy, there's always new layers of bureaucracy, but I did see a report from our friend John Solano on AS Roma Press that now Pallotta is looking to buy some land outside Rome to build the stadium. That is a good sign. If that happens, then I'll be more optimistic. As far as that being really helping Roma, let's put it this way. It definitely can't hurt. It should be an improvement, but it's not necessarily always a silver bullet. I mean, look at Udinese. They have a new stadium. They really haven't improved much, but I think it would send a great message for Roma as a club that, you know, is developing their brand, you know, through social media and in a lot of ways very well. So I think it would definitely raise the profile of Roma. I think it would make it easier for them to attract big name players and coaches. So let's hope it happens. The problem for Roma, though, is really the huge debt that Pallotta inherited from the previous owners. He's put in a lot of his own money. They are getting out of the financial fair play mess pretty soon. So the stadium would definitely be a move in the right direction.
All right, David, how about this one? How much of Napoli's football is still sorry ball? And what has Ancelotti changed besides more squad rotation?
I'm going to say there's still 25, 30% of sorry ball with what we see from Napoli now. If you and I've watched almost all their matches this season in Serie A, you definitely see sometimes the players. And again, keep in mind that there's a lot of the same players that were there. I'm not sure if it's instructions by Ancelotti or them simply being used together. You see the triangles. You see them going down the left flank with a cross to the second post and somebody waiting there, which was kind of the trademark of Napoli under Sarri. A team that wasn't particularly vertical passing, you know, just they really had a lot of characteristics, and you definitely see it at times where there's been a lot of variety besides the rotation. I think you look at Napoli's played a lot of different formations. They've played with two strikers. They've adapted in match in different ways, while Sarri did the same thing. Now, I will say this, let's be honest, I know Sarri's been getting beat up a lot because of what's happening at Chelsea, but it's not like things at Napoli, despite the fact Ancelotti's doing all the things that Sarri was criticized for, are any better. I think in a lot of ways you could say they're worse. In Serie A, they are completely out of the title race. I think they have 10 or 11 points less than they had this time last year. They've been eliminated in the Coppa Italia and the Champions League. Now, granted, in the Champions League, they tried a little harder. To me, they have to do really well in the Europa League, and I'm going to go as far as saying they have to win it for us to definitely say that Napoli's better off without Sarri. Now, maybe Sarri also saw it coming. He felt like he had gotten the most out of the team as it was, and he felt like had he stayed, it would have only hurt his legacy. I think Ancelotti did a nice job putting enough changes so the team didn't totally fall apart. Keep in mind, both you and I, Alex, had Napoli ranked third at the start of the season. We thought Inter would surpass them. That doesn't look great, but I've really said all along that I thought there was going to be a bigger gap between Juve and Napoli than between Napoli and Inter, and despite Inter being in full chaos, that is still true now. So this isn't really a criticism of Ancelotti. Again, I felt it was always going to be a letdown for Napoli. So he's made some changes. There's still some elements of it there. So I think, though, Sarri, in a lot of ways, what's happening at Napoli is one of the few things that makes him look good this season.
Yeah, and you'll find just so many Chelsea fans who have their nose stuck up in the air, and because Sarri hasn't won anything, they really don't pay any attention to just how damn good Napoli were last year. I would have thought by this time, by February, Chelsea fans would have used maybe something else against Sarri, not the fact that he didn't win a trophy last year, because once again, that proves that you're not giving Juventus enough credit at all. So, David, next Twitter question. Is Koulibaly worth a record-breaking transfer fee for a defender?
Yeah, we've answered this a few times, and I had someone else ask me about transfer targets that Manchester United should follow in Italy. So, again, to prove that, I'll answer any question people send in, as long as it's respectful. It's not just Chelsea. Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, and I don't watch a lot of other leagues, so it's hard for me to judge. But for me, Koulibaly, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a defender as good as him make such an impact. I've said it in one game, I'd probably take Chiellini in Serie A over him. But over the course of a season, I'm taking Koulibaly without a doubt over any defender in Serie A. I think he could do great on any team. So I think he's definitely worth whatever the fee a club will pay. Now, I'm still not sure he'll be available. He keeps saying he wants to stay at Napoli. I think if it came to it, Napoli would much rather sell Alan than Koulibaly, because they have a great track record of finding midfielders. Defenders like Koulibaly are much harder to come by. So as it stands now, I'm still going to say I'd be rather surprised if Koulibaly leaves in the summer. Now, as far as Manchester United, I still think they should shop in Italy. I think Manolas makes a lot of sense for them. He's a player, an outstanding center back in Serie A. I have him as maybe the fourth or fifth best one in the league. Has Champions League pedigree, has experience, has speed, which in the Premier League helps. He has a reasonable exit clause. He has Mino Raiola as his agent. So that makes a lot of sense to me. If Manchester United wanted to look at like younger players, the Fiorentina defender Milenkovic, who we've talked about quite a bit on the podcast, is excellent. Sampdoria center back Anderson has been very impressive. I'm not sure if Skriniar will be available in the summer. I'm leaning towards he won't. But that's obviously another player to watch. So definitely a lot of intriguing center backs in Serie A, that's for sure.
Yeah, honestly, Serie A is just so strong center back wise, in my opinion, because when I think of the center backs that I would just break the bank for or block a talented youth player for, there's really not that many. And two of them would come from Serie A. One would be Koulibaly and one would be Milan Skriniar. And besides that, it would just be Raphael Varane from Real Madrid, Van Dijk from Liverpool, Matthias de Ligt, of course, from Ajax, but really not that many other players. I might be forgetting a couple, but obviously they have to be relatively young as well. Koulibaly's 27, Raphael Varane's 25, Van Dijk's 27. So I'm not going to include a Mats Hummels or a Sergio Ramos, who are 30 plus. Now, Diego Godin obviously is 30 plus as well, but he will count for Serie A as well. So just really impressed with what Serie A has right now in the center back position. So, David, next Twitter question. This is a very good one. Who will be the teams that will get relegated?
Yeah, and for those that aren't hardcore fans, you mentioned Godin. Well said. He's joining Inter on a free transfer, and they look to have an amazing back line because De Vrij is no joke at all. He's been really outstanding this season. I'm going to throw him in the mix there too. So the race to relegation, again, keep in mind, we're recording this before Bologna faces Roma. I think at this point, Chievo and Frosinone almost certainly going down, although Frosinone has 16 points, Bologna has 18. I guess they could rally. For the third spot, it really comes down to Udinese, 22 points, Spal, 22 points, Empoli, 21 points, and Bologna, 18 points with one less game played. I said it from the beginning of the season that I thought Bologna was in big, big trouble. I do think bringing in Sinisa Mihajlovic, though, who is a coach with his limitations, but for this situation, he's perfect. A short-term fix, someone that can push the team, that makes a lot of sense for me. I'd kind of like to see Empoli stay up. So I'm going to say it's going to come down to Bologna and Spal. Let's see what happens there. Spal does have a pretty intriguing team. They have a pretty good home field advantage. But gun to the head, I'm going to say Bologna. Actually, you know what I want. I'm going to say Spal. Udinese, though, also has a chance because of going down, because they just really have been lifeless this season. And you know what? Maybe Udinese, in a way, this is what they need, because their owners have been a little bit checked out. They also own Watford and have been much more into that. So that's going to be a fascinating race the rest of the season, just as much as the one for the Champions League. Before we get to the music question, which we'll close on, one of our loyal listeners asked me after I'd written the outline, to talk about Roberto Baggio, and today is his 52nd birthday as we're recording, me, and he asked me, you know, what I thought about his legacy and career. So, you know, I'm old. I've seen all of Baggio's career. It's kind of hard for me to praise someone from Vicenza, because I grew up in Padova, and Vicenza is our bitter rival, but Baggio's from there, so I had heard about this phenom, you know, ever since I was a little kid, well before he was on Fiorentina and later on Juve. I've said it many times, to me, Baggio is the best Italian striker I've ever seen, better than Del Piero, better than Totti, the most talented player, but also a really fascinating character, really lot of characteristics that are opposites in a lot of ways. Like, he's a devout Buddhist, but also someone who's really into hunting. You know, and in Italy, you know, especially when he was playing, being a Buddhist was somewhat controversial. This is an incredibly Catholic country. And, you know, Baggio, for a lot of people, is remembered for missing the penalty kick in the World Cup final against Brazil in the shootout. And Baggio had an amazing quote, and a very Buddhist-like quote, that he said, yeah, he was really disappointed, but then he remembered that Brazil has a lot more people living there than in Italy, and he realized that by missing that penalty, he made a lot more people happy. And, you know, while Baggio was a great player, he also clashed with a lot of his coaches. Like, he really didn't get along with almost any of his coaches in his career. Feuded with Lippi, feuded with Sacchi on the Italian national team, at almost every club, and he didn't stay at any club that long. He really didn't get along except for Mazzone, who he had at Brescia. So a fascinating character. What I really liked about Baggio, you know, especially now when you look at how polished and corporate all superstars are in any sport, he was always been his own man. He also briefly worked on the Italian Federation and saw what a zoo it was. And he said, you know what, I'm not going to attach my name to this. In that sense, I've always respected him, kind of in the way how Maldini didn't get involved with Milan until he felt confident with them. So Baggio, definitely an amazing player, but I also really appreciated how real he's always been as a person. So buon compleanno to him, despite him being from Vicenza.
All right, David, and let's move this away from football. If you had to make a hair metal mixtape, what would be the first five songs?
So first of all, I love mixtape. Alex, you probably have no idea what this is. Again, I go back to when I'm old. This was well before streaming. CDs had started being around. But, you know, when we were young, you'd make like mixtapes. You know, from songs, you'd have like two tape decks and record them over. If there was a girl that you liked, you'd send her a mixtape. It was kind of corny, but it was a big part of my youth. So hair metal, this was really popular in the United States in the 80s, made, you know, a lot of bands that probably weren't very good musicians a lot of money. Exploded for a period of time. It really was the hottest genre in music. Then, you know, Guns N' Roses kind of changed that a little bit, because although they came from that scene, they were much more of a classic rock, blues-infused band. And then Kurt Cobain and Nirvana and alternative music, like, really ended that. But it was a genre that was very, very popular for a while. So if I had to make the first five songs on a mixtape, I would definitely start with Poison. And if I have to think of one hair metal band more than any else, it would be Poison, because some bands have elements of that and other things. Poison never really shied away from that. And I'll pick Talk Dirty to Me from their debut album. Second song is from Rat, Round and Round, that was also featured in the movie The Wrestler. You have to have Motley Crue in a hair metal, you know, mixtape, although they kind of changed a little bit their sound later on in their career. I'm going to pick Girls, Girls, Girls for Motley Crue. For hair metal, you have to have a power ballad in the mix. I'm going to pick Skid Row's I Remember You, which I think is not just the hair metal, but just one of the best rock ballads out there, period. And I'm going to end it with Warrant's Cherry Pie, which has a lot of double entendre lyrics. You know, they're pretty raunchy. And the one thing that stands out to me about this, in our era of political correctness, Me Too and all, there's absolutely no way any of these bands would be allowed to put out the videos that they did and the style of music. So if you really want to see what America was like in the 1980s, a very different era, definitely check that out. So before we get to our interview on Milan with our good friend Matt Santangelo making his debut on Calcioland, I want to take a moment to thank our listeners. You guys send us fantastic questions. I always like to say you guys are the co-writers of the podcast with me, and I appreciate all you do with that. We also appreciate your support with the podcast. This is a completely free podcast. We've never even done a GoFundMe or anything. Alex and I put a lot of time and resources on it. We asked you guys to step up to the plate with the tweets promoting the podcast. You have. You've left a lot of reviews on iTunes. I'm challenging you guys in North America. My birthday is on April 10th. Right now we have 386 reviews on iTunes. Let's get that to 400. You don't even need to write anything. You can just tap on 5 stars. That really helps us grow. If you want to leave a message, we read them all. And I think it's really important that people hear from you guys what you like about the podcast. So we appreciate your support. And now we're going to close with Matt Santangelo. He's been covering Serie A for a really long time. You guys can read him on Football Italia, these Footy Times, also on Gentleman Ultra, one of my favorite websites. His work has been featured in The Guardian, on IS Roma's English site. And he also has an excellent podcast that started recently called State of Play. I asked him about it at the end of the interview. But you'll get a big dose on Milan before that. So thanks for your support, and we look forward to chatting with you later this week. So for the interview part of the podcast, I've been telling myself it's pretty incredible that we haven't had Matthew Santangelo on Calcioland quite yet, but the timing of this really couldn't be better. So we're recording this right after Milan's very impressive win over Atalanta. Matt's been big on the Piontek train for a while. He covers Milan often. He's pretty passionate about it. So although, Matt, this took way too long, I don't think we could have picked a better time. So welcome on board to Calcioland.
David, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Okay, so let's start with the game that just happened now, and then we'll talk about Milan's season a little bit bigger picture. So tell me a little bit, what were some of your main takeaways? I have a feeling this has to go down as one of the most impressive wins for Milan this season and even in recent years, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, when you travel to Bergamo with the form that Atalanta are in, it's never going to be easy. Immediately, once Milan stepped on the pitch, players were introduced, all that stuff. You really saw how live the crowd was and how really up for it they were. But again, the fact that Milan were able to get a goal out of nothing towards the end of the first half with Piontek just goes to show you, I think, again, the type of striker he is, but the type of season that Milan's having. Again, it's kind of been a roller coaster, right, with all the injuries where people are doubting if they're going to finish top four, what they're going to do in January. But in any case, it's Gattuso's. He steadied the ship with all the injuries. He's getting guys back. And getting back to asking me what the takeaways would have been, Çalhanoğlu, I talked about it in a previous podcast yesterday, where I thought that this game had the opportunity for either him or Suso to kind of get off the schneid, get out of their funk, and contribute in a big way, and really maybe have this be the turning point of their season. Sure enough, Çalhanoğlu gets a great goal, his first Serie A goal of the season. You saw what it meant to him and the bench, and even when he hugged Gattuso. So that hats off to him for that. I think that's something he can really take with him moving forward. But it was kind of a weird way for Milan to win, right? Again, they looked very sloppy in the first half. They really didn't look like they were up for it. And then they pull a goal out of nowhere. And then the second half, a completely different mentality, a completely different approach, where they looked like they were on their front foot the entire game. Again, got to give credit to Gattuso for that, because I think, again, they took that Piontek goal towards the end of the first half. They built from that. They were, okay, oh, we're back in this game. Now let's go after them. They got the second goal from Çalhanoğlu and then the third goal from Piontek, who we saw, again, through these 4 or 5 games, everything he is as a striker, his aerial ability, his movement, his finishing ability, so on and so forth. So those are some of my main takeaways. Again, Suso being a little bit disappointing in this one is probably another one. I think, again, when you look opposite of him with Çalhanoğlu getting such a big goal, you would have hoped a guy like Suso would have been able to do something along the same lines, maybe an assist, maybe a key pass. But with the yellow card, he's going to be out for the next game. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I could even mention Paqueta. I think he was Milan's best midfielder today, hands down. He was retaining the ball well, even when Atalanta were pressing him into difficult positions. He found a way to get out of it and progress the ball forward. So, and he's doing it quickly. He's acclimating quickly, I think, from Brazilian football to Italian football as quickly as he has, starting games right away, playing, asked to play a big role. It's just a testament to the scouting of Bernardo, to assess who the players are he's buying and how they fit into the short-term plan and the long-term plan.
Well said. So this has been, I'd say, a very eventful season for Milan. I go back to when it was late October, November, when the team had a bunch of injuries. Romagnoli, Bonaventura, Biglia, Musacchio. You know, it's kind of, I think back then, had you told anyone that Milan would be in this position, it would have been hard to believe, especially with all the transfer moves. So if you had to give a grade to Milan so far this season, what would that be?
I'd probably say a solid B. And the reason why I say that is, again, they had some results early on in the season where, even despite having injuries to key players, they definitely should have beaten them. You know, again, you can even look at the reverse leg, or the reverse tie, excuse me, in this match against Atalanta, where Milan looked to be the better team against Atalanta. I think it was back in September, October, and they let that game slip away. And then they even had a couple other games where they dropped points. So I would say B. Again, I understand that they did have injuries. I understand that they had a whole situation with Higuain. But overall, again, Gattuso's—he's been a difficult spot. There was pressure coming from all sides that maybe he was going to be sacked. The management has maintained that he's their guy, despite all the chaos going on Milan Twitter, football Twitter, regarding his status at the club. He's been able to steady the ship, and he's starting to show what type of manager he is. Maybe he still has some things to work on tactically. But I do think you're starting to see hints of maybe, dare I say, a Conte, in the sense that he can really motivate these guys when maybe they feel like they're not playing that well. And out of the gate was a perfect example today. At the second half, you saw a completely different dynamic, a completely different Milan side. So overall, I would say a B. But again, of course, as you would probably agree, the job's not finished. Without finishing top four, it's definitely going to be considered a disappointing season. So we'll have to see how they do the rest of the way, and of course in the Coppa Italia.
Okay, so let's talk about something that really improved recently, because at the beginning of the season, I mean, there was a long streak where Milan never had a clean sheet, and that has really changed, you know, towards the end of the first half of the season and certainly in 2019. So in your opinion, what has been the biggest reason for the recent improvement with Milan's defense?
I think it's been a couple different things. First, health. I think, you know, even in the beginning of the season when they did have Romagnoli and Musacchio, they weren't as sharp. They were still trying to kind of settle in, get a feel for things. And then, of course, even Donnarumma didn't get off to such a great start. He had that error in goal in the first Milan derby that resulted in Icardi getting the match winner. So that was kind of at a difficult and delicate point for Milan. But as you've seen, their record since December speaks volumes as to how settled in and how comfortable they are with that back four, and of course Donnarumma playing a large part in that. It's as a defender, when you can see that you have a guy like Donnarumma who can save you and bail you out in certain points, it helps you ease into your job a little bit. It helps you be a little bit more comfortable, helps you, you know, kind of look at the game in front of you and think, I just got to take care of this. My goalkeeper's got my back. And I think, again, it's not even just so much focusing on the two central defenders, because I think obviously Romagnoli and Musacchio have been really good. But you can also look at the fact that Davide Calabria has come into form, a young, born and bred Milan youth product. He's not only really in a solid form right now, but he's giving Milan options at the right back position with him and Conti, who are both young. So again, you know, we talked about it for years and years and years with this Milan team, where they're lacking quality, they're lacking depth. Now they're starting to add quality and depth to the bench by having multiple guys who can fill in where needed. We even talked about it again with Ignacio Abate and Christian Zapata starting several games for Milan at the beginning of this stretch, this defensive stretch of theirs, filling in for two injured players and doing a good job, all things considered. So everyone's pitching in. I think that's kind of one of the biggest things with this Milan defense as well, is that despite all the injuries, there's guys have one another's back and they're just carrying on as usual.
Okay, so now let's talk about the man of the hour. Two goals today. Again, Piontek's been sensational. I think, you know, even the biggest fan of Piontek couldn't have expected such a fast start, but maybe you, since you've been on this train for a while, could have seen it. So let's start. If you had to describe him to someone maybe hasn't watched him that much, or maybe he's just watched him in the past few games, what would that be like? And I'm going to ask you flat out, did you, even the most optimistic person with him, expect him to be quite this good?
Well, I mean, I think, again, if you're kind of new to Piontek, even, you know, new to Serie A football, you're obviously getting in at the right time, because you're seeing, you know, this guy, this Polish player, in a matter of 6-7 months, become one of a household name around Europe quickly. Piontek is a striker. Again, I think there's many misconceptions about him. He was obviously very unknown coming over from Cracovia to Genoa for 4.5 to 5 million euro in the summer. Of course, he really kind of announced himself in a smaller way in the Coppa Italia versus Lecce. I think he scored 4 goals in that game, doing it in a bunch of different ways, via the header, more of a poacher-like goal, and some clinical finishing. But as we saw the season progress for him at Genoa, you really got a glimpse of that, man, this guy, he can score. When he gets that one or two touches per game, he's really able to make the most of them, but he needs a little bit more around him, maybe through the midfield, through the wings. And I think that's what we're really starting to see him show at Milan, is that he's not just a guy who's, a one-trick pony in the sense that he's a poacher. He's just going to kind of roam the box and wait for things to come his way. I think what this move to Milan has done for him is it's kind of motivated him in a sense to say that, I know there's a lot of pressure on me. I know I came over for a big fee, but I'm going to show you what I can do. I'm more than just a guy who scores goals. We're seeing him, get involved in the buildup. We're seeing how, underratedly quick he is and explosive he is from a still position with his first step. And a lot of the other things that you can't really quantify, the hunger, the mentality, the instinct, and the movement to get into a position like he did for that first goal and even the second goal, where we showed off his aerial ability. So, I mean, look, I'd be free to say, and I'd probably be lying to think that I expected him to, erupt in this way. But I think it's worth pointing out that his former manager was quoted as saying, if no one spends 4.5 to 5 million euro on him now, they won't be able to get him for 40 to 45 million euro in 2 summers. So again, maybe he was the only guy who saw this coming. But for me, again, from what I saw at Genoa, I think, again, a new environment with a little bit more around him, again, having that pressure of wearing a heavy shirt, I think that was only going to motivate him. And you can really see that in his interviews. He's not he's not a shy guy. He's very confident. He's humble, of course, but he's very confident in his abilities. And I think it's no surprise that he's getting off to the start he is at Milan.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously Milan deserves a ton of credit. That move now looks, get rid of Higuain, replacing him with Piontek. Great. I think, Genoa, let go of him, but they deserve a lot of credit for being that team that invested that amount. So let's talk about the other big acquisition Milan made in January, and this Paqueta. You already mentioned a little bit about him, how he's adapted quickly from Brazil. So give me your assessment of him so far. Anything specifically about him that stands out to you as far as his attributes? And do you think what he brings to the table is kind of what Milan has lacked in the midfield the past few seasons?
Well, my assessment of Paqueta so far is that, I feel like he's a quiet, confident player. In the sense that I think, again, that we talked about, all the expectations that he had really since he was this move was secured, which came back months before the January window opened. And people started labeling him as the next Kaká, and people started writing up these exposés about how he's the next Kaká, trying to compare them to and to fit him into a specific hole. But for me, they're different players. They're not the same player really much at all. And in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. I think, again, a guy like Paqueta to immediately come into Milan's midfield and to reignite it the way he has by doing a little bit of different things. Again, we've seen how silky he is on the ball and how he's giving a little bit of flair to Milan's midfield, which is at the moment a little bit more strong, has a little more strength to it with Kessié and Bakayoko. He's that guy that's filled in tremendously well for the injured Bonaventura. They haven't had a guy who can really progress the ball. You can make defenders miss and obviously look and make the right pass, which is the biggest thing. So I think for me, again, if you're looking at what type of attributes he has and if he has the right attributes that Milan are lacking at the moment, I absolutely do think they lack, I don't know what it is, but maybe they lack a little bit of, again, the flair, the creativity that they have been missing for quite some time. Again, no discredit to any of the other guys they've had, but even in their wide positions, they're kind of just lacking that cutting edge at times. And I think Paquette is the guy that brings that excitement with one or two moves. And even in a game like today, we saw a little bit more of what he's able to do, holding onto the ball when being pinned back, able to progress the ball quite well. He's doing a lot of the extra things too that maybe doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but when you really assess performances and you look at them for what they're worth, I think you could really start to see that Paqueta's, he's doing extremely well, but he has a lot more to give. And I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest takeaway from his stint so far, is that he's been able to do it really quickly. Gattuso's asking him to start games right from the jump without being onboarded, and he's passing with flying colors so far.
Okay, so obviously the two new additions, Paqueta and Piontek, look like keepers long term. But let me ask you, what other players currently on Milan do you think are good enough if the team wants to take the next step? So right now I kind of see Milan as a team that is definitely in the mix for a Champions League spot, but Milan, needs to at least next season be a team that can consistently qualify. So basically what we've seen from Napoli and Roma in recent years. So with that in mind, which of the current players on Milan's squad do you think are good enough to be part of a group that can achieve that?
I think the majority of them are. I think, again, obviously we look at the goalkeeper, Donnarumma, has been a staple for Milan since he took over for Diego Lopez a couple seasons ago. And you look at the back line. I think, again, you can be touched upon with Conte and Calabria. I think Milan have two good options there at the right back position, and they both fit the mold of what the management wants in a lot of their players being younger. I think Gazidis was adamant on getting younger players that can grow, that have a lot of resale value down the line. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing in most departments for Milan. So if I had to go then defensively, I think, again, Caldara, we have yet to see him really show us what he can do. Romagnoli, Zapata even, who has Champions League experience, and Moustakio. So I think centrally, Milan are quite stacked. They have enough there. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Milan try to upgrade and get a little bit more depth at the left-back position, a little bit of a different role. No discredit to Laxalt. I think, he's done a decent job where needed. But I think Milan can find better, again, of course, if they're able to get the funds from a top-four finish. In the midfield, Milan do still need a deep-lying playmaker, a regista. I think we talked about how great Bakayoko's been, but I don't think he's that type of guy that you can expect to pull the strings, do all these different things. He's kind of a different player in a deep role that would really complement more than succeed, like a Lucas Biglio, who, again, we're waiting to see how he does when he gets back. A guy like Sandro Tonali would be a perfect addition for me. Again, you would have Biglio for another year. You can kind of ease in Tonali, who has been clear that he really does like Milan. He, is a fan of Gattuso. So that's something where I think, again, Milan do need to focus on is in the midfield and getting a little bit more depth, maybe get another younger player. Of course, the option on Bakayoko would be quite the addition as well. But I think we're going to focus on what Milan's biggest needs are for a possible Champions League qualification next year. It would be wingers. I think, again, Suso, he's creative. He can assist. He can do all those different things. But he's not as explosive, not as pacey, not as quick as maybe some others, like a Douglas Costa, as an example, or even like a Federico Chiesa or a Jose Callejon, just to name a few. So I think, again, wingers are going to be a big focus for Milan in the summer, regardless if they finish top four. And I think when you throw in a possible fourth-place finish or third-place finish, with the fact that they do have a couple players that they could possibly sell, even Andre Silva, I think, again, Milan really do have a good opportunity to get a really quality winger and fill some other needs in the summer as well. So I think, again, the spine and the foundation for Milan is there, but they do need to spend in certain areas to really make them a more suitable and more well-stocked Champions League team.
Let me ask you about Gattuso. You mentioned earlier he has some limitations. You can see some seeds of what Conte did at Juve. Definitely agree there, the determination. Conte fixed Juve at the back. Gattuso finally did that as well. So let me ask you, if this team, I'm going to put it even this way, do you think Gattuso stays as Milan's coach, even if, God forbid, they are right out of a Champions League spot? Basically, what would need to happen, in your opinion, for him not to return as the coach next season?
Well, first off, let's look at the entire situation here, because he was given that extension, his current deal, which runs until 2021 under the previous ownership of Fassone and Mirabelli and Lee Yong-hong. So again, despite the fact that maybe people are looking for a new coach, and that maybe Maldini and the new front office will be looking to get their guy, I think the words and the quotes that we've heard from the current management, lend credence to the fact that they do trust Gattuso maybe just as much as Fassone, Mirabelli, and the previous ownership did. Now, I think, again, you made a good point. Obviously, if Milan do finish outside the top four, will they look for a new coach? I think absolutely they will. I think, again, when you have a guy like Conte who's available, who, again, if you look at some of the other clubs around Italy, that maybe Milan would be the most appealing destination and Milan would be able to pay him the money and convince him to join their project. I think it's obvious that they would look towards a guy like Conte, who would be, again, would fit in right to Milan. But having said that, I think what Gattuso's been able to do with this team and this group, which again was saw a massive overhaul a couple summers ago when they brought in almost a dozen names, he's starting to understand the players a lot better. And I think that's something that, again, we've seen with Conte, even at Chelsea, you know, managing bigger egos. You know, sometimes things get in the way and sometimes, you know, players, certain players don't take to him. So I think with that being said, again, a lot's going to hinge on Milan's finish at the end of the season. Again, if they finish fourth, I think there's no question that he's still the manager. If they finish, let's say, fifth, but maybe win the Coppa Italia, I think there's still a good possibility that he does become coach. But I wouldn't be surprised if they did go the route of getting Conte. Again, when you have a guy, a manager like that available, I think it went without having to deal with the situation that Chelsea had to deal with getting Maurizio Sarri over there. Conte is essentially a free agent and ready to go wherever he pleases. So that makes it a little bit more interesting. But again, of course, it's tough to say right now. We still got so much football to play, and we really have to see how the race for top four shakes up.
So speaking of the race for top four, Inter's definitely back in the mix. About a month ago, I'm not saying they look like a shoe-in for the Champions League spot, but they looked in really good shape. Now they're right back in the mix. So out of these teams, who do you think Milan should be more concerned with? Inter, Roma, Lazio, and Atalanta.
That's a good one. I do think it's Inter. I just think it's the city rivalry. I think, again, you know, a derby match could be in a month's time could be the changing of everything. I think, again, when you look at a team like Roma and Lazio and even Atalanta, they do have their shortcomings. They do have their faults. Obviously, a team like Roma and Lazio and Inter are all still in the Europa League. I think for Milan's sake, they're hoping that they go as deep as possible. So it kind of, you know, they have to kind of allocate resources and energy towards the competition. But I think, again, out of these four teams that are kind of in the thick of things with Milan for the third and fourth spot, I think, again, it just has to be Inter. I think, again, you know, you can look at this situation and say Inter can either, you know, grow from this with the whole, you know, situation going on with Mauro Icardi and, you know, his captaincy being stripped. And now this recent Twitter, you know, back and forth with his sister. We got to really see what type of team Inter come out with this weekend. But then there's also the fact that the way that Inter can go is down a dead path, in the sense that they see Milan, everything is a full-fledged capitulation on their end. Icardi leaves, Spalletti leaves, and Beppe Marotta is given the keys to pretty much rework and rewire Inter in the summer. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think the biggest thing for Milan and really some of the other teams around them is this next couple weeks to really see how they grow, because Milan are winning, and that's the biggest thing. If they're winning games, they're putting pressure on everyone beneath them and above them to get the same results. And this is a time for Milan to strike. So it's going to be interesting to see which one of these teams can kind of, go tit for tat with them and kind of exchange blows. But if I had to pick one, I would probably go with Inter. I just think they have a ton of quality. I think they're still a fourth place team in that squad. But it's going to be interesting to see if they're able to get around all this, unnecessary and really just kind of crazy, situation regarding their striker.
So now let's talk more in general about Serie A. You were definitely big on the Piontek train. You were on a big support of Torreira last season. Tell our listeners some Serie A players that have stood out to you this season.
Well, I could always look towards Samp for players who break out, right? Obviously, Lucas Torreira was the one last year who got a big move to Arsenal. And then the summer prior was Milan Skriniar, who got the big move to Inter. And he's become one of the better young central defenders in Europe. If I had to go, I'd probably go with players who have broken out in a big way and have raised their stock and have pressed me. Would be Carlo Linetti from Samp. I think, again, you know, he's kind of a little bit of an overlooked player in that midfield. Again, we had last year with him, Torreira, and Dennis Pereira, who was linked to Juve at certain points, he kind of got lost in the shuffle. He's not a flashy player. He's not a guy that's going to do a lot of different things to kind of make you turn heads. But what he does is that he brings a lot of balance. He's a player that can dispossess. He's good defensively, but he's a really well-balanced player. And I think he's a guy that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him moved on an underratedly big move in the summer. He's just one, I think, again, you can look towards Atalanta, Mancini, their central defender. It seems as though that this team continuously can just churn out young talent, grow young talent, and just make profits off him. I wouldn't be surprised if Mancini's another one. But even the goalkeeper, Emil Auduro from Sampdoria, who's been sensational. Like, he's just another guy I could point out as a guy that raised his stock, a Juventus loanee. Arsenal were interested. It looks like Samp want to buy him. So those are just a couple players, but you can even go a little bit lower in the table, and I'm sure you can find more gems at teams like Genoa. Obviously, Kouame is a player that excites me. I think, again, with all the discussions around Piontek in the January window, he was linked to a move to Napoli. Even I think it was Sevilla and Roma tossed around the idea of getting him as well. So those are just a couple. Again, of course, I can go on all day. I'm sure you can as well. But those are just a couple that I wanted to highlight.
Okay. So it was long overdue to have you on. I enjoy a lot of your work. You've been writing about Serie A for a while on a lot of different platforms. Football Italia recently, These Footy Times, Gentleman Ultra, which is a great site. You've been featured in The Guardian and Roma's English site. But recently you started a new podcast, which is really, really good. So tell our listeners what they can expect if they tune in to State of Play.
So the State of Play podcast, it's more focused on the major headlines around Europe's top five leagues and Major League Soccer. You guys do a tremendous job in covering and your staff with Di Marzio of covering the transfer window, which, again, hats off to you for another one that just recently passed. So what we kind of wanted to focus more on the main major headlines that, maybe are not as quickly evolving or quickly changing as, obviously the transfer window. So what we do is we try to focus on, the major talking points around Europe's top five. Of course, we kind of break it down where we look at what's going on at that time of recording. But we also try to do is bring to light some of the players that we would like to know more about, and even our audience would like to know more about. My partner and I, he's an Arsenal fan, so he obviously knows the English space quite well. I'm obviously a Serie A guy, so I know what's going on in Serie A, but we like to bring in different guys to bring different perspectives on what's going on around the world of football. So again, we've had Janusz talk about Piontek months ago before he made the move. So that was kind of a little, we planned that right. We had, who else? A couple guys talk about Nicolas Pepe. We had John Legossi from ESPN talk about Timothy Weah, of course, the PSG loanee now at Celtic. So that's what we try to do is we try to, we don't claim to be experts on one specific player that's the hot commodity of football. But what we try to do is we try to get guys who can educate us and our listeners on who the next wave of players is going to be that are going to make a name for themselves. And that's it in a nutshell. Again, I appreciate you letting me have the space here to talk about the new podcast.
Awesome, Matt. It's been a real pleasure to have you on. So thanks so much for joining us on Calcioland, and we look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
Thanks a lot, David. I appreciate it.